Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP Section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guests.
Thank you, Sarah. Welcome to the Building a Tax and Financial Planning Advisory Business podcast series. In this episode, I'm joined by a few CPA financial planners, and we're going to focus on working with other advisors as part of your client's planning team. I've got with me Susan, Scott, and Chris. And Susan, I know that you don't handle the investment piece, so certainly that's someone else that you have do that for your clients. So on the call here, you're probably the person that works with other advisors the most. Why don't you start out and say, how do you work with other advisors? How do you bring them into the team to be part of your client's financial plan?
Yes, we work with other advisors every day, all day, as a matter of fact. We are the primary point of contact for our clients, and we coordinate the work of all the other advisors for our clients. A client's time is really their most valuable resource, and so we try to give them back as much time as possible through the coordination of all their other advisors. And our fee is even structured in such a way so the client will continually reach out to us and let us be that primary point of contact. Sometimes if they've been dealing with another advisor, they may go to that other advisor first, but so our fee structure is really important in that, because they know that when they reach out to us, they're not going to be billed for every phone call or email. It's a retainer fee, if you will, and we quote them a fee for the entire year, which does not change. So that really helps us in this role as being the primary point of contact. And we make sure that all their other advisors are working together and putting the goals and the need of the client first. We're our client's advocate, and this includes acting as an advocate with their other advisors as well. Some of the other advisors are being paid based on commissions, if it's insurance, based on assets under management, if it's investments. And so we make sure that all those advisors are looking out for the client's best interest. And that's actually what the name of our firm means. Paracletes, the Greek word for advocate, counselor, one who walks alongside of you. And we truly do that with our clients. If a client, after we've put their plan together, if a client needs an advisor, such as a trust and estates attorney or a transactional attorney, if they need a CPA to prepare their taxes, because we do not prepare taxes, we do tax planning but not tax compliance, or if they need an investment manager, we make introductions to these other advisors, we set up the appointments, and we will introduce them to two or three advisors in each category until they find one that they're comfortable with. We educate the client on what that other advisor is going to be doing and how they're going to be doing the implementation. So they choose someone who best fits their personality and can meet their needs. Other advisors are extremely grateful to be part of this team because their businesses grow as a result of meeting with all the other advisors on the team and becoming known as a team player. The other advisors end up referring clients to each other, and it makes for a real win-win situation. Just to kind of give a little perspective, one of our best planners in a typical year could generate 75 to 100 revocable living trusts, or 75 business entities, 50 qualified plans, bring investment accounts to an investment manager of up to $100 million, and for insurance brokers, $50 million of life insurance. other advisors are definitely drawn to our firm because we don't sell any of that. We don't manage those assets. We need them to do that. And as a result of that, they often bring us their clients to have financial plans done. It just becomes a great atmosphere of synergy, collaboration. It ends up bringing the best advice to the table and is so cost efficient for the client. They're cost efficient and time efficient. They're not having to call all the advisors and saying, well, this advisor said this, so I need to do this. They're all included in all of the communication and at the meetings. And it's interesting because it brings all the other advisors an increased confidence to act because they've had a team to bounce ideas off of and to make sure that they really understand what the client's need is. So it's been just a great model for us. As I said at the beginning, our firm is that primary point of contact, and the clients absolutely love it. There's nothing like sitting around a table with the client and these other advisors and seeing the client's face as they're watching the advisors discussing how this is going to best help the client.
Thank you, Susan. Chris, you're kind of at the opposite end of the scale where RSM has put together many of these pieces, I'll say under one roof, even though they're separate businesses. Could you describe kind of using one of Susan's words in terms of the primary point of contact in your organization, who becomes that? And is it the person who had the original contact? And then how does all that work within RSM?
Usually if it's a tax client, if it's one of my tax clients and I am building out the team, I will be the quarterback on the team. Sometimes people reach out to me from outside the firm, other advisors, and I'm just a team member. So it's kind of who's the original source of the client. I try to identify appropriate team members for the client's complexity and price point. So while we do have in-house resources, I don't just compose a team of RSM employees. It's not always RSM tax, RSM wealth management, RSM insurance, and then an outside attorney. I usually always do refer RSM to the client, but I usually make several referrals, most of which are outside of RSM. Part of that is I don't want to seem self-serving, but I also want the relationship to make sense for the client. Our firm is not a good fit for everyone. And so it's really important that the client can identify and connect with all their advisors. So if that means that I have to send them to an outside wealth management person, sometimes that's the case. But always there's several referrals, numerous attorneys, a couple insurance people, and I always have a couple financial advisors, non-RSM advisors on my referrals.
Hey, Scott, can you, I say you're kind of in between because you don't have, let's say, all the things of RSM, but you do, let's say, more than Susan's organization does. How do you work with other advisors and what type of other advisors do you bring in to be part of that financial plan?
Yeah, Ted, I'm going to handle this in a couple different ways. One, kind of outlining some of the advisors that we use, but then when I was listening to Susan and Chris talk about this, I was thinking back about when we started our firm and kind of the evolution of the firm. And I think for people that are getting into the practice, one of the challenges is how do I develop this team or where do I come about meeting some of these individuals? And for us, we came and started the firm back in 1994, which was forever ago. But most of us came from other, at the time there were big eight accounting firms. Now there's four or however many of the big four we want to talk about. But, there's been a big change in the environment. But one of the things, I was with Arthur Anderson, and it was real easy. Like Chris, I'm sure anytime he has an estate planning issue or he has a retirement plan issue or various issues, he's got a network internally. And at Arthur Anderson, that was great because I could pick up the phone, call New York, call Chicago, call wherever I needed to call. But when we started our own firm, you have to redevelop that network. And so I think a couple avenues that I would encourage people to explore is Working, the AICPA is a great avenue, but even your state society is another avenue where you can get and you can network. And I encourage you, first of all, to start networking with your peers that are doing financial planning, because they're going to be great resources. So I'm in a couple of different study groups. One of them's mostly investment advisors, one of them's CPAs. But it's invaluable to have those networks and be able to bounce ideas off of each other and kind of develop the bigger firm mentality. And from that realm, then, you can talk to them about, you know, estate planning attorneys. And I joined in Denver, the Denver Estate Planning Council and the Rocky Mountain Estate Planning Council, so I could network with some attorneys that I thought would fit well with clients, met them at events, and kind of developed relationships with them externally before we got under fire, and just made sure that I thought that they'd be a good fit for our clients. Other things that you're going to need, depending on what you're doing, you know, Ted does not have a tax practice, so he's going to have to work with a CPA firm or somebody to do the taxes, but you'll have that piece of the covered. You'll have estate planning attorneys, insurance. You're going to have clients that need life insurance, long-term disability, long-term care, you know, the magnitude of insurance products. And we're not draft any documents. We do not sell any product. So that's something that we're going to work with somebody on. Retirement plans, whether it be qualified plans or deferred plans, deferred compensation plans, you know, we're going to have people that work on that. And then as your practice matures, the other thing that, you know, you get outside the box, and when you're trying to work with clients and provide opportunity, we found that unfortunately, 50% of marriages end in divorce. And so you're going to have some relationships, one, with some good divorce attorneys, but we also try to be a little proactive on that scenario. So usually you might be the first person that hears that somebody's getting divorced because they're calling you and asking for a referral. So we actually, over the years, ended up having a marriage counselor fall into our lap. So usually, you know, when you start thinking about all these different services and what you can provide, you're going to have a lot of, as you get into the financial planning practice and you're dealing with some of these issues, you're going to get a lot of strange calls from clients on different things. I had one client whose daughter passed away, and I was the first person he called because he was just numb and didn't know where to go or how to go about it. So I think you just kind of develop these professionals, and you, the more networking you do, both within different professions, it might be the Rotary, or within study groups, and I encourage you really to start with the state society, your local state society, or the AICPA to do some of these networking, because it's a way to get a lot of expertise in that process. And then the other kind of in that networking realm, I think when you're doing your continuing education and you're finding out the areas you want to go to, look for conferences where, again, you can network. And some of the conferences I found, you know, are very detailed. So, like, AICPA Engage is the most technical financial planning conference you'll ever attend. It's just mind-numbing how technical it is, but it's invaluable. But the networking is more valuable than to me, or has been to our practice, than even the continuing education. So I think you pick and choose some of these events that you go to, and just network like crazy, because some of my best resources come from colleagues that I've networked over the last 15, 20 years with, and it's invaluable to the development both of you personally and the development of your practice.
Yeah, Scott, those are some great examples. I think it's very important. And Susan, Chris, could you chime in, either one of you or both of you, about somebody who's been a tax preparer and now they're getting into this area and now they're going to need those contacts? How do you go about finding the attorneys that you're going to work with? How do you go about finding the insurance people you're going to work with? You know, how do you make that first step?
Ted, I started that by networking in my local area with the Estate Planning Council, with the Georgia Society of CPAs, with the chamber, our local chamber here, and met as many people as possible, was on different committees for all of those organizations, and talked to people, met people, constantly was meeting with people and asking them who they knew. And it takes some time, but you can build up an incredible network of other advisors that way. And that's what worked for me.
Okay. Chris, you were mentioning you had, let's say, a different price point that maybe somebody couldn't afford this attorney, so you'd find some other attorney. That must have been a lot of work. How did you begin getting all that together?
So I've developed a list of advisors from, I was a member of the Society of Financial Service Professionals in the greater Washington area. And there's, that's comprised of CPAs, financial advisors, insurance agents, estate attorneys, investment bankers, and everybody else under the financial services umbrella. So that's, I've been pretty active in that, just making connections over the years, developing friendships. I have a career advisor with my firm, and just other mentors in my life in the financial planning CPA space. So using them as resources to make connections with other advisors has been instrumental.
So all three of you had mentioned it's really getting out from behind your desk and getting out in the community and meeting people and becoming a people person, finding out about all these other services. Is there any other, I'll consider that, let's say, a first baby step. Are there any other baby steps that each of you might say are an important part of putting these teams together beyond going out to all these various organizations that you've all talked about joining and becoming a part of and an integral part of to gain knowledge about the other folks in your community? Susan, do you have another baby step you might say for folks to reach out and create this team? And not just create the team, but a team that's going to allow you to be that center person.
Another way that I have found some very wonderful advisors to work with is through some of my clients, because some of them already come with advisors. And I know that we're talking about people who are just starting out, but they probably have tax clients, and they could sit down and talk to them about if they have an attorney or an insurance person that they trust and really like and would make a recommendation or an introduction to have a meeting with. That was one other way. And that would be a very helpful way for the people that are in tax wanting to expand their services to financial planning services, because talking with your current clients about what you're thinking about doing is just a really great way for them to get excited about it as well. And a fantastic way to have an icebreaker, if you will, with some of your close clients is working and talking them through the tax planning checklist and the scorecard tools that are in the personal financial planning section's website. Those are just fantastic tools to talk with a tax client about. And see what kind of financial planning needs that they would have. And in those conversations, you can bring up what advisors do they already work with.
Okay. Chris, Scott, do you have any other baby steps folks might take?
Yeah, Ted, I think a couple other baby steps, and once you start developing these groups, again, you can, with the estate planning attorney or the life insurance agent, you can do some joint events or some of those things. I think to the extent you go out there and kind of look at these individuals, make sure, I mean, you're referring your clients to these individuals, so make sure they're qualified and get comfortable with that. In some instances, when you're starting out, it may be, you talk to somebody and you share services. So effectively, if I need an estate plan or I need something done on my side, I can work with somebody, make sure I'm comfortable with the process, and I can in turn do a financial plan for them, and you might develop a new client relationship. But I think it's a matter of, like Susan said, go out, network like crazy, interview people, and it's not so much interview, socialize with people, get to know them, and make sure that they have the mindset and the personality that you want your clients to deal with, and that you think your clients would appreciate, and you bring that back then to the shop. And it's an evolving process, and you'll go through, and to Chris's point, there's going to be different different needs at different levels. So you might have one client that has a much more sophisticated need and needs a bigger law firm. You might have somebody else that an individual that has his own law firm is fine. You might have somebody else that needs a mid-sized type solution. So you just kind of network, and your the referral or the list will grow on its own as you work through the process.
Great.
Yeah, and it's more than just going out and grabbing business cards from networking events. You really do need to vet some of these people, because you know, if you're making a referral to a client, you're putting, you know, faith in this person that they're going to treat your client the same way you would or better. I've had instances where, you know, I've had a relationship with an advisor where I didn't have confidence in his ability to serve the client. So he might be giving me referrals, but I probably wouldn't want him on my team. So do your homework before you make that referral.
And Ted, I think the other thing that you need to be aware of, when you're doing these referrals, stay involved in the process, stay involved in the client relationship. If they're doing an estate plan, you know, make sure that their objectives are being met. And just don't necessarily hand it off. I think Chris made the comment that if it comes from the tax area, he's going to quarterback the meetings. And I think that's where, remember, you're doing the financial planning and advisory services for your client. And so the fact that they need an estate plan doesn't mean that I just hand them off to the estate planning attorney and check my box and say, okay, that one's done, and then send them to an insurance agent and have them, you know, be involved in the process and understand what's being implemented and that it's coordinated overall. And I know Susan's firm does, that's what they do. They just coordinate all the advisors. And that's what you want to do is be the quarterback of the process, the financial CFO, if you will, where you help the clients implement their plan.
Wow. Well, I want to really thank Susan, Chris, and Scott for all these insights that we had today. And boy, if I'm listening to this podcast, I would love to sit at that 2-day seminar and pick your guys' brains in person. On behalf of the PFP section, this has been Ted Sarensky. If you enjoyed this podcast, I highly encourage you to join us at the Building a Tax and Financial Planning Advisory Business Workshop and visit the Planning and Tax Advisory Services Hub at aicpa.org/grow-advisory-services to learn more about the why, the what, and the how. Stay tuned for Sarah Bradley, who will tell you how to find these valuable resources. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit aicpa.org/PFP and check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.